Hello, I'm Mariette Snyman, a journalist devoted to uncovering new ways to live a happier and healthier life. Thank you for tuning into Calm, Clear and Helpful, the weekly podcast series which introduces you to wellness professionals, offering their expertise and assistance. Today's topic is emotional dysregulation as a key component of ADHD. If attention deficit hyperactivity disorder or emotional dysregulation features in your life or the life of a loved one, I trust that listening to this podcast will bring you clarity and relief. My guest is Runel Carver, counseling psychologist from Johannesburg. Welcome, Runel.
Hello. Hi, Mariette, and hello to all the listeners. I'm very excited to be here today and to chat to you about this topic.
And to our listeners, during our conversation, Runel will offer some advice for the parents of children with ADHD, and then it will be fun question time. Runel, could you tell us more about the work you do?
Yes, so I'm a counseling psychologist and I work at a group practice called West Psych Psychologist. We are on the West Rand. We are quite close to Clearwater Mall, if anyone knows where that is. We have a phenomenal team of passionate and experienced psychologists. We're about seven at the moment. I personally work with children, teenagers, adults, couples, and families. I do therapy and assessment work across a broad range of problems. I'm particularly very passionate about working from a brain-based theoretical framework and using brain-working recursive therapy.
Thanks, Runel. People are increasingly recognizing and talking about neurodivergence. How would you define neurodivergence?
So neurodivergence is quite a more recent term. It's a non-medical term, okay? And it's used to refer to someone whose brain processes, learns, and behaves differently than what's generally considered typical. So just like a fingerprint, every single person's brain functions in a unique way. So neurodiversity to a certain extent is normal. So we don't all think and behave and process things in exactly the same way. But what we have found is that usually for people who have kind of more marked differences in their neurological functioning, whether that be because they're on the spectrum or have a genetic condition or have even a kind of brain, you know, trauma to the brain can also cause someone's brain to act in a neurodiverse way. Those are usually the conditions that's referred to when people talk about neurodiversity and someone who's neurodivergent. So these are also people who might have learning disabilities or struggle with sensory processing disorders and also refers to people who have ADHD. So when just talking about those conditions, it tells you that these are conditions that usually a person's born with. It cannot be prevented or cured. So the task there is to help that person to manage their neurodivergence well, which can be done.
ADHD that you mentioned is widely known but often misunderstood. What Yes. kind of disorder is this?
So ADHD in particular is a neurodevelopmental disorder. So we usually first notice it in early childhood. So usually a parent or a teacher or someone who's close to the child, they'll have a feeling like something's different about this child. This child is a little bit more sensitive or a little bit more challenging. And so usually we start getting children coming to the practice as early as 3, 4, 5, you know, where the parents are questioning, is this normal? And sometimes it isn't picked up. So sometimes we only pick it up, say, in primary school. Some people are only diagnosed in their teen years or even in adulthood, where it's been completely missed. So usually people with ADHD, their main difficulty is struggling with focus, the ability to sustain their attention and concentration and not get easily distracted. And then sometimes you also get difficulties with impulsivity, being really reactive to situations, and even hyperactive, way more hyperactive in comparison to other children or people who are in a similar situation. So there's two types. You get the inattentive type, and then you get the combined type. So in the inattentive type, the main issue is attention and concentration. And then in the combined type, the person struggles with attention and concentration, but also the hyperactivity and impulsivity. So that is by far what we see the most kind of in practice. But the other type is often missed, in particular when it comes to girls. A lot of girls with the inattentive type are not picked up as easily or readily.
Ronelle, could you elaborate on the symptoms of ADHD?
Yes, so the common symptoms. So this is a kind of a checklist for all the listeners who are listening. So people with ADHD often struggle with being careless, forgetful. They sometimes have trouble understanding or following multi-step instructions. They can take longer than expected to finish tasks. They sometimes rush through things and get easily overwhelmed by detailed tasks. They often complain of procrastination, especially when I see teenagers and adults, can be very talkative, have low frustration tolerance, racing thoughts, get easily bored, easily distracted, difficulty sustaining attention and concentration. They can be very disorganized and untidy. If you have a child like this or know an adult, they often need a lot of help with planning projects, time management. They struggle without oversight or some sort of structure. They can have quite a poor sense of time, often losing things, often moving or fidgeting, difficulty sitting still. If they are sitting still, even though they look perfectly calm and sitting still, they can feel restless and agitated, like, you know, they want to get on the move or they need to move. They often struggle with sleeping, so difficulty falling asleep. They can be loud or disruptive. They're often very impatient, so really struggle when you need to sit in a queue or in a long line or when something doesn't happen as quickly as we wanted to. As they get older, you realize they struggle. That people say they have no filter. So they often just say the first thing that they think of or that comes out of their mouth without thinking beforehand. And because of these kinds of issues, they frequently have conflict with either parents or teacher or other children or siblings. So it really does impact so many things.
Which general challenges are associated with ADHD?
Yes, so ADHD, like any other kind of neurodivergence, it affects every aspect of life. So it makes everyday living and occupational functioning more difficult and really places a lot of strain on the individual as well as all the people working with them. There is a spectrum of severity, though. So it doesn't affect everyone in the exact same way. But research has shown us that people with a combined type who struggle more with the impulsivity and hyperactivity, they often have a more negative psychological outlook. And they're more likely to develop other comorbid conditions like anxiety, depression. And one study I read said that up to 70% of people with ADHD suffer from at least one other mental health disorder, whether it's an anxiety disorder, a mood disorder, substance disorder, sleep, personality, or just being on the spectrum as well. So you can have ADHD and autism. And they often have other learning or language processing disorders as well.
Now we're coming to the emotional challenges, which...
Yes.
Yes. Could you tell us about the emotional challenges faced by these individuals?
Yes. So the emotional dysregulation component, I mean, this is a brain-related symptom. So when we're struggling with dysregulation, it tells us about our brain and how our brain is functioning. So when we are dysregulated, it means that we're having trouble managing our feelings and emotions in a healthy and safe way. When we are well-regulated, we feel calm, rational, and focused. And this means the brain is well-integrated and working well together. So when we are angry, excited, or even anxious, the brain's a bit hyper-stimulated, a little bit in overdrive. When we are really down, depressed, or even shocked from a trauma, or people who struggle with feeling dissociated or just disconnected from the world around them, the brain's in a depressed, low state, so that it's a bit in shutdown. So you can tell, you know, why people with ADHD or people with neurodivergence would struggle with emotional dysregulation. It makes so much sense because their brain is often struggling with either being too understimulated in some parts of the brain or overstimulated in other parts of the brain. So they often really struggle with regulating emotion.
Ronelle, could you tell us why emotional dysregulation is considered a key component of ADHD?
Yes, because people with ADHD have executive functioning deficits. This really affects the brain's ability to self-regulate. So our executive functioning is related to the prefrontal cortex, and that's the part of the brain that helps us to regulate. So it helps us to self-soothe, to have compassion for ourselves, to have empathy for others, to see the bigger picture, problem solve, and to put ourselves in other people's shoes. So if people with ADHD are struggling with development or their brain works differently in that part of the brain, they're going to struggle with regulation. And traditionally so, you know, when you look at, say, our diagnostic manuals, you know, it doesn't mention at all the emotional regulation side of things. And when you look at it, it's just a checklist of symptoms. And I'm really heartened by the fact that many medical professionals and psychologists are starting to see the person behind the diagnosis and see that there's a real human being there who has a lived human experience with this condition. And I think I'm privileged enough to really see that side of it as a psychologist. When people come to see me, they need help with that. They're struggling emotionally, or they have some of these other difficulties like anxiety or depression. But at the heart of it, it's related to the ADHD. So when we work with people with this condition, we're helping them with that side of things, you know. So we have the most understanding and kind of experience of, you know, the emotional regulation and dysregulation associated with ADHD. And I'm just happy that people are starting to notice that and take note of it, because then we can better help people.
Indeed. It was very interesting when I saw a Facebook post on the West Psych Facebook page referring to emotional dysregulation as a key component of ADHD.
Yes.
And one never thinks of that. And I'd also like to know, does emotional dysregulation affect all individuals with ADHD?
Yes. So I would say to a large extent it does. I think in less severe cases, though, it might not be as noticeable. But I think with any sort of neurodivergence, it's going to affect emotional regulation. But I think that some people who have it less severely might have learned how to cope with it. But I think also some people are very good at masking their symptoms or their challenges. So you might think, oh, they're fine, or they appear perfectly normal. But a lot of people mask just to be accepted, and they internalize a lot of those difficulties, and they try so hard to just be like everybody else, but inside they struggle.
It's interesting that you say it can be masked, the dysregulation. What does it look like? How does one know emotional dysregulation is involved?
Yes. So when you have issues with regulation, whether it's ADHD or another condition, you will find that their life is a series of highs and lows, Okay, so life almost feels like a roller coaster. And for someone with ADHD, just the struggle with focus can lead to a lot of agitation, a feeling of stress and anxiety about not being able to complete tasks to the way it's, you know, meant to be completed or in the timeline it's meant to be done in. And I think also it can lead to questions around your self-worth, which can also look like depression. And a lot of people with ADHD feel like, you know, they're more often than other people are criticized. As a child, children often are compared to a lot of other children. Like, why can't you just be like this child, you know? They often experience more punishment as people try to control them or discipline them. And so it leads to a lot of issues around self-esteem and confidence, and they're more likely to struggle with depression. I think that is really what it looks like often for people struggling with this condition.
You've mentioned some of the factors that, some of the ways someone with emotional dysregulation is impacted. Would you like to elaborate on that?
Yeah, so I think, it's when you talk to people who have this condition, I mean, you see that a lot, you know, the difficulties with anxiety or depression or relationships or difficulty coping at work, you know, and the stress that's related to that. And I also often see people trying to self-medicate, you know, whether it's with natural substances, but also with drugs. So, you know, a lot of people, in an attempt to try to regulate themselves better, often turn towards addiction, you know, and addictive substances, things like gambling, or, you know, some people are almost addicted to relationships. They'll be in and out of relationships, you know, trying to find someone who's going to accept them or love them or help them with their struggles. So those, I see that quite a lot in terms of working with people.
What are the causes of emotional dysregulation in the lives of individuals with ADHD?
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest things is the brain side of it, you know, how your brain works. Because the brain, you know, it's fascinating when you look at the brain and the different parts of the brain, and you see the brain is like a whole system, and all those different parts of the brain work together to achieve balance and to achieve, you know, good functioning, you know, that sense of being well adjusted, being calm, being focused, being able to think rationally and solve problems. That's our ideal, what we strive towards. We know that, you know, we aren't born with a fully matured brain. This is something that happens over the lifespan in terms of maturity. So we know the brain reaches full maturation around 25. Some people even argue up to 30. So we know that children haven't got a fully developed brain. So they do struggle more with regulation. But when you're working in practice, you know, you can see the difference between just a child who's struggling, as would normally developmentally be so, like around 3, 4, 5, you'll get, you know, tantrums and meltdowns and those sorts of things. That can be quite normal. You know, we don't expect, you say, a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old to be able to just sit still as an adult would and just give complete focus and just always cooperate and always solve problems, you know, calmly. They need a lot of input from us to teach them those skills. You know, it isn't something we're just naturally born with. But I think that this becomes even more challenging for someone whose brain is neurodivergent, because their brain doesn't necessarily work in the same way. And so what a normal tantrum might look like, whereas someone is having a complete meltdown, you know, can be very different. And so a lot of these issues with regulation are related to the brain. And that's what I love. I love, you know, meeting someone and getting to understand, how does your brain work? You know, what are your particular difficulties? What are the challenges? And trying to understand, why is that so? And what can we do to help with that?
Yeah, what I like about that is that it means, I think people often feel ashamed of the ways in which they are different. And if it is related to the brain, it means there's no reason to have those awful feelings.
Exactly. I 100% agree with you. And that's why, I mean, seeing issues from this kind of brain perspective, it takes so much of the shame and the guilt and the criticism and judgment away from that for parents, but also for the children. And even if I meet an adult who discovers that they have this condition, it's not your fault. It's how your brain works. So all that shame can go away, you know, and we can say, well, how do we help to maximize your functioning? So say if someone is easily overwhelmed or easily anxious or has particular triggers and they get very aggressive or angry, then we have to work with that part of the brain just to tone down and calm down the nervous system. You know, so with the kinds of therapy that we do and that I love to do, it's all based on the brain. And I love it because it takes away all kinds of shame around having particular difficulties.
Yes. Before we come to the treatment, I also wanted to ask you about a concept I only recently learned about. Rejection sensitivity or rejection sensitive dysphoria. Could you explain what this means?
Yes. So I also, before your chat, this interview with you, I thought, let me read more about it because I think it's also something I'm learning more about, you know. And I mean, when I looked into it, it's not a diagnosable condition like on our diagnostic manual, but it's often something that comes up when you talk about neurodivergence and people on the spectrum. And the reasoning for this rejection sensitivity. So the rejection sensitivity is like when there's some sort of rejection or criticism or punishment or some sort of setback or failure, you know, people who have rejection sensitivity, they experience it with such intensity. It's like a physical pain, you know, this pain is so intense and they become completely overwhelmed by this feeling of failure or not being good enough or being rejected even by others. And like I mentioned before, often people with ADHD or other neurological difficulties, you know, they're always being told, you're not doing it right, that's not right, this is wrong, you know, you should be doing it this way. So they become very afraid of criticism, rejection, and making mistakes. And, you know, because of the executive functioning deficits, and oftentimes people on the spectrum, if we do brain scans and we look at their brains, they have a very sensitive amygdala. And so that brain's alarm system is very sensitive. So they very easily get triggered into fight, flight, or freeze. And they feel things very intensely, very, very intensely. So some people with this rejection sensitivity, they say it's like a physical pain, like they can feel it in their body, you know, and it's very overwhelming. And the problem with that, you know, is it can lead to avoidance, avoiding situations, avoiding people, avoiding doing certain tasks for fear of being punished or criticized or making a mistake. And it can also lead to a lot of anger and defiance and even depression.
Quick note on what I do. I showcase health and wellness experts or individuals using their creativity to bring about transformation. By using my background in journalism and podcast production and my media network. Spotlighting therapists, coaches, and other professionals not only expands their client base, but positions them as trusted voices in wellness and boosts the sales of books, courses, and other offerings. On the other hand, the podcasts and articles I create provide readers and listeners with an ever-expanding resource on living a healthier, happier, and more productive life. It also introduces them to helping professionals they can trust to support them in their wellness journey. If you're a wellness expert keen on expanding your reach and credibility, let's talk about co-creating a podcast or article, or perhaps featuring you in a South African magazine. You'll find more information under services on my website, marietsneeman.co.za. I work closely with my weekly podcast guests and the professionals I interview for articles, offering step-by-step support. I especially enjoy assisting first-time podcast guests. Now, back to my current guest. Now we come to the treatment possibilities. What is generally available?
Yes, so I think the most important thing, if you suspect you or a loved one might have ADHD or have any other sort of neurodivergence, I think it's really important to get diagnosed correctly. Like I said, this is often a spectrum. And so you need a thorough assessment by a trained psychologist, psychiatrist, neurologist, or even a developmental pediatrician sometimes does these kinds of assessments. And once you kind of know your brain, what you're struggling with, how your brain works, and that you do indeed have this condition, then you can look at the treatment options. So the treatment options are usually divided between a medical route and then a kind of non-medical route. So in terms of the medical route, you'd be seeing a registered doctor or physician, and they will discuss with you the medical options. So medical options might involve medication. I know that a lot of people, especially parents, you know, who have children with ADHD, almost their first gut reaction is, no, I don't want medicine. I don't want to go the medicated route. But sometimes it's really necessary. And sometimes with the right medication at the right dosage, you'll see a complete change in your child, you know, for the better. And if there are negative side effects, I tell parents, please go back and discuss that with the prescribing doctor, and they can adjust their medication or lower the dosage so that it's more tolerable. But of course, you know, that isn't the only treatment available. So we also have other treatments available, like more traditional psychotherapy or play therapy. We also have neurofeedback therapy. So this is someone who's trained to do EEGs and QEEGs, and they can offer neurofeedback therapy to also help assist the brain to function better and be more regulated. Depending on the child or the person's other needs, sometimes they need occupational therapy or speech therapy, but this is usually only indicated once we've done a proper assessment. And then also, my favorite therapy is the brain working recursive therapy.
Right. Now, please describe what brain working recursive therapy is.
Okay, so this is a kind of therapy that's relatively new in terms of the more traditional therapies that we've done, but it's a brain-based therapy. So it's been developed because of neuroscience research and the research outcomes that we're being seen. And so the whole therapy is designed to work with the brain and how the brain functions, which makes it a perfect fit for ADHD, as well as other issues with the brain and regulation. So we use it for so many things and so many kinds of disorders and difficulties. What I love about brain working recursive therapy is that because it's brain-based, and we're working with the parts of the brain that are not governed by, you know, our conscious thought. So kind of the frontal lobes and the prefrontal cortex, that's where we have conscious intentional thought. But sometimes we work at that level, but then the person in the heat of the moment, in the difficult situation, struggles to access all of this wonderful knowledge they've learned in therapy. So you might teach someone how to breathe and how to calm themselves. But when they're in a stressful situation, they're like, but it's so hard, it's so difficult. I knew I was supposed to do that, but I just couldn't do it, you know? And with brain working recursive therapy, we work with that part of the brain where the dysregulation happens, even before you're consciously aware of it. So in that split second before you've said something or done something you later will regret, we're working just before that decision is made in the brain. So we're working with the emotional brain and the part of the brain that's triggered in the fight and flight and freeze response. And it's just before that decision is made. So there, what we're actually doing is we're helping the brain to be better regulated and better integrated by taking some of the wonderful knowledge and wisdom the person already has. And we actually encoding that or putting that into the brain as an alternative response. So to feel differently, to think differently, and to behave differently. And we disable the unhelpful programs. So the things that we're doing that we don't want to keep doing, we want to do those less and do the better things more often and make that the preferred response. So I use the BWRT protocols very closely whoever comes to see me. So they give me a list of what are the issues you're struggling with, what do you need help with, and we put together a list and then we work systematically through that list to help them achieve their goals. And then the behavior you want to see comes more naturally without having to intentionally, consciously think about it each and every time. And so I've just seen phenomenal success with clients that I've been using this with.
And so they're able to regulate their emotions better when you yes. work with them.
Yes, very much so. And, you know, a lot of people on the spectrum, children, teens, adults that I've been seeing where I've been using BWRT, it's just been so easy and they just seem to understand it and accept it. And it's effective, you know. So I think that's the best part, is that you actually see you really helping this person to be more, feel like more themselves and to behave in a way that feels in alignment with who they are, what their higher values and principles are. And then they feel like, I can do it. I can overcome the particular challenges that they're struggling with. And it builds that sense of resilience, you know, and then also they're not as ashamed of themselves and who they are, and they're able to accept, this is who I am, this is my brain, these are my quirks, you know. And yeah, so I've seen such good and positive results using this with clients with this particular issue, but also with many other issues as well.
Yes, I have great respect for brain working recursive therapy. I've had it myself, and it's very helpful.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and I'd like to mention to our listeners that on my platform, on my website, if you put BWRT into the search function, you will find numerous episodes relating to different matters. But getting back to what we're talking about, you know,
yes.
I've heard people say that they get very anxious when someone talks about helping them change their brain. So could you please explain, when someone comes to you for a session, what can they expect in practical terms?
Yes, so practically you want to understand what is the problem. So I work with a person when they come to me and say, what are you struggling most with? What has brought you here? What are you finding difficult? What do you wish you could do better? What do you wish you could change, you know, in terms of the way you're feeling or your behavior, whatever it is. So my main job in that first session or two, just to figure out what is the problem, what is the issue? And to break that down to its smallest component. So if someone says, I'm just always anxious all the time. So I'll say, well, what makes you anxious? You know, often anxiety is related to fear. What are you afraid of? You know, what are the worst case scenarios that run through your head that keep you up at night? So we work as a team, you know, to try and figure out what is the issue. What could this be? Where does it come from? So that happens quite quickly. So I work very, you know, I want to figure out what it is soon, quickly. I don't want to waste people's time. So by the end of that first or second session, I ideally want a list of, this is what I'm struggling with. This is what I'm struggling with. This is what I need help with. And then once I know exactly what that is, my job is easy, because then I say, okay, so if it's trauma, then we do this. If it's anxiety, we do this. If it's depression, we do this, you know? So once you know exactly what the issue is, then it's easy, you know? And then we say, okay, next time you come and see me, we're going to work exactly on that. So say, for example, someone is struggling with exam-related anxiety, you know, then we'll say, okay, so when you're sitting down for the exam, what is your worst fear of what could happen? We need to paint that picture. Once we have that picture, then we're ready to go. Then we can do the BWRT for that. And then you're working with that memory. So even something that's never happened, say you people with anxiety often are afraid of something and things that haven't even happened or might never happen. But that's still stored as a memory in the brain. So whatever you picture, that's a memory. That becomes a memory in your brain. So with BWRT, we work with the memory and where the memory is stored. So just by thinking about it, you're activating that neural pathway. And we work directly with it. Like I said, it's like, you know, we disarming or disabling the ineffective approach or way of thinking about something or feeling or whatever the behavior is related to that. And then we work to create a better one. So a better pathway, the pathway we want to have. And yeah, so this works very, very well with the emotional dysregulation side of ADHD, because what is dysregulating you? You know, as if we know what those triggers are or what those issues are, we work directly with that.
I'd also like to mention, if someone is wondering, there's no technology involved and no touching, right? It's you.
No.
You speak to the person. Please elaborate on that a little.
Yes. So you're not hooked up to anything. There's no fancy devices. It's not in a hospital setting at all. So you're sitting comfortably on the couch in an office. I work very hard to make people feel safe and welcome and warm, and that there's no judgment at all. And this is all done as a team. So what do you want to work on? Are you ready to start? You know, have you got your picture in mind that you want to work on? So everything's explained. There's no secrets. There's nothing funny. Everything is very open. And I always make sure, is this really what you want? Are you ready? Okay, let's do this. And if at any time someone's uncomfortable, they can just say, stop. I'm not feeling well, or I don't want to do this. And there's no repercussions at all. So if, like I said, if someone doesn't feel safe, then we can't do our work. So my job is, I want you to feel safe and regulated when you're with me and accepted, and you know, everything's very calm and it's compassionate. So no one should ever feel at all afraid of you know, coming to see us or coming to do this work with us. Everything is done with the greatest respect. you know, and it's done all step by step, and there's nothing that's hidden at all. And when you're happy and you're ready to go, let's do it.
Runel, if someone comes to you for emotional regulation to learn that, is it usually a long-term intervention?
Not necessarily. So, I mean, especially now using the BWRT, I mean, we can work through things very quickly. So, I mean, there's some people who have come and within one or two sessions, they're happy. So it all depends on your goals and how big the problem is and how complex the problem is. But I've seen remarkable improvements even in just 3 sessions or 5 or 6 sessions. And, you know, it's all about your goals, what we've written down on that piece of paper in the first session or two. And then we tick the things off the list and then we say, okay, what else? Is there anything else? Are you happy? And a lot of people, after they've resolved, say the first, you know, 3 to, I don't know, it can even be less than that. But, you know, the first few things, they're like, I feel so much better. Everything's going so well that those other issues on my list don't even bother me anymore. You know, and then people don't even need to do every single thing that they've written down. So it's really client specific on the issue. It, these days, I mean, therapy doesn't have to be weeks and weeks and months and months and years, you know, the way it was before. Like, we've come such a long way in terms of our approaches that people don't have to worry about it taking forever. And I think also, just to let other people know as well, with the BWRT, you don't have to sit and talk and talk and cry and cry, you know. And it's literally, oh, this is the issue, let's sort it out. So I think a lot of people, especially people who are neurodivergent, they love it. You know, they don't want to sit and feel very uncomfortable, don't even know how to sometimes verbalize certain things, you know, and that we don't have to do that. So people seem to really respond well to that. Even men, they're like, oh, this is so nice. I've gone to therapy before and I just had to sit and talk and talk, and it feels like you never resolve it and you're there forever. And it doesn't have to be like that anymore.
Yes. And one of the best things is that it is cost effective, because it doesn't need to take 12 sessions.
Exactly. No, and it's just so wonderful to have an effective solution for people that doesn't take tons of money and so much time and so much suffering. You know, we have just such a faster way of dealing with these issues.
Mm. Runel, do you have any advice for the parents of children with ADHD?
Yeah, so my main advice is to not be afraid, you know, to come and look for help. If you have questions, is this normal or not normal? The first step is speaking to someone, getting a proper assessment done. So we do assessments at our practice as well. So people are welcome to come if they think, oh, does my child have ADHD? And to be honest, I mean, 8-9 out of 10 times when someone comes and says, does my child have ADHD, they don't actually have it. So, you know, I think oftentimes people have a lot of misconceptions about ADHD. What is ADHD? We get a lot of teachers who say, oh, this child has ADHD, and then they come for an assessment and they don't have it. So I think it's really important to be properly assessed, to not be afraid of that. And exactly what you said earlier, there's no shame. You know, it's like the sooner you just, oh, this is who I am. I was born this way and I have nothing to be ashamed of. This is how my brain works. It takes so much of the shame out of it. And it's one of my favorite things about what I do, that I get to tell people, this is what it is. There's nothing to be ashamed of. And that there's so much you can do to manage it better and to work with it well. And some of the most important work is just accepting your child, or accepting yourself, accepting this is who you are. And that's okay. Your brain is doing the best it can, and, you know, with what it has. And yeah, so that would be one of my biggest messages to parents, is to not be afraid, to not be scared, to not be ashamed of your child, or for people who are older, to not be ashamed of it at all if this is the case that you have this. There's so much that we can do once we know what the issue is and we can accept it. It's so easy. Well, then how do we support you with that? What do we do to overcome that? You know, so then the road becomes so much clearer and a lot easier. And then you or the child feel supported and it feels, oh, we can do this. It's going to be okay. So that's my biggest thing, is that people just need to be not afraid to look for help, to be assessed, and to then engage in the treatment options.
Thank you. Do you work online?
I do. So, I mean, since COVID, it's become almost a norm, you know, it's quite easy. So we do work online. It's only in much younger children that, you know, where we need to do mainly play therapy, where it's difficult to work online. But otherwise, you know, I'd say from ages 9, 10 and up, we can do online work if people struggle to come in.
Where can listeners learn more about your work or follow you?
Yes, so listeners are welcome to just Google Westpsych Psychologist. We do have a website. So our website address is www.westpsych.com. We also have a Facebook page, which is also called Westpsych Psychologist. So people are welcome to follow us on our Facebook page. We regularly post on psychological issues of all kinds across all ages and issues. People are also welcome if they want to WhatsApp us or give us a call. The number is 061-492-5714. That's 061-492-5714. If they would like to book for therapy or assessments, they're welcome to do that, and reception will be there to assist and answer any questions.
Thank you. I'll attach the link to the website to the podcast, and the telephone number will be in the podcast notes.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Mariette.
Thank you. And Ronel, before I let you go, may I ask you a fun question?
Of course you can.
Okay. If you could be a character from any children's book or kids' movie, who would you like to be?
Oh my gosh, that's a very interesting question. I think I would probably be like Minnie Mouse. I used to love watching Mickey Mouse and those sorts of cartoons when I was younger. And I just think she's so cute, you know. So I could probably see myself being a Minnie Mouse.
And I think the ears are important because you do a lot of listening in your work.
You're so right. You're so right. I should have really big ears at this point. I do a lot of listening, and I really feel it's one of the, you know, the greatest values of my work is that I get to listen and help people feel heard. So thank you for pointing that out. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Thank you, Ronel, for highlighting ADHD and emotional dysregulation. And I think what really stood out for me was everything you said, but especially the rejection sensitive dysphoria, which is something I didn't know about. And I do hope that this is going to bring some relief to people who struggle with some of these issues.
Me too, me too. That's my greatest wish, is that people reach out for help and that they get the help that they need, because they don't need to struggle and they don't need to do it all alone.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. I'd be honored if you'd subscribe to this podcast and rate it where you download your podcasts. And if you found this episode helpful, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, for this episode's podcast notes and for free podcasts and articles on how to live a happier and healthier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn, just search for Mariette Snyman Journalist. The podcast series, Calm, Clear and Helpful, is produced by me with original music by Mark Marie Snyman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9.